Broadcasting from Youngstown, Ohio, this is the MV Red Podcast, the show where we talk about news and politics impacting the Mahoning Valley, the state of Ohio, and the USA. If you want to subscribe to our podcast, find us on your favorite podcast streaming app or visit our website, www.mvred.com. If you want to share your opinion with us, please email info@mvred.com, as we would love to hear from you. Now, let's get things started. Here are your hosts, Michael Metzinger and Dane Davis.
Welcome, everyone, to episode 2 of the MV Red Podcast. My name is Michael Metzinger. Joining me once again is my co-host, Dane Davis. Dane, how are you doing today?
Doing really well, Michael. I'm doing really well.
Glad to hear. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today. So we have a lot to talk about on this episode from a national political perspective. The two-night CNN Democratic presidential debates just concluded last night, so we will go over the winners and losers of both nights and see if anyone has any momentum coming out of the debates as we roll into the month of August. And then I figured we will piggyback off the debate discussion and give you an update on our Democratic power rankings. I know that my rankings have changed, and it'll be interesting to hear if Dane's change as well. Then we're going to talk briefly about the Robert Mueller testimony from last week and how it turned out to be a big disappointment for many who were hoping to see President Trump possibly impeached, or at least see impeachment hearings proceed in the U.S. House. So we'll talk a little bit about that. And I thought it was ironic that although we heard Bob Mueller's name virtually every single night for the past 2 years on cable TV, his name was noticeably absent from the Democratic debates the last two nights. So we'll talk about that. And then lastly, we'll answer some questions that we have received from our listeners. And just a reminder, if you have any questions for us for a future episode, you could send us a Facebook message on our Facebook, MV Red on there, or you could email us info@mvred.com. We'll be happy to share your questions in a future episode and respond to them. So let's get started on the Democratic debates from the last two nights.
And how many people listened to the episode 1 of the podcast?
I think we're above 70 or 80. It's from what I read, the getting statistics for podcasts isn't necessarily the most accurate thing like it would be for accessing a website. So I'm going to try to do a little bit more research, but I do know within the last 3 days we were added on Google Podcasts, and then last night we were added on Apple Podcasts. So if you're tuning in and you're a big podcast person and you subscribe to podcasts on Google or on Apple, we encourage you to subscribe. So it's nice because, I mean, the first few days after our podcast was up with Dane, the only ways you could access it was on the Anchor website or on Spotify. So now I think we're on about 7 or 8 platforms. So I think as we start spreading the word and people, if you, especially our listeners, if you enjoy our podcast and you know people who enjoy politics, definitely share it with them. I heard a lot of great feedback and a lot of people who were pushing or were very excited about the prospect of a second episode. And they were asking me actually the last 3 or 4 days, when's episode 2 coming? When episode 2 coming? So if you enjoyed our first podcast, certainly subscribe and definitely tell anybody you know who has an interest in politics about our show.
Hey, so when do we get the sweet ad dollars from like Casper.com and all those other lame brands that have podcasts?
Not real sure about that, Dave.
How many people do we need? Like 100, 150? Because this is basically my retirement plan. So
let got a long way to go.
They're coming in, okay?
We need some more mergers and acquisitions.
Yeah, I'm just in it for the I'm in it for the money. I'm giving you political punditry for cheap money. So yeah, you know, we need a Patreon. Isn't that like the website where people can give money to people?
Yeah, actually, I follow quite a few YouTube channels where people pretty much have their career is a YouTube channel, and so they pretty much live off of Patreon subscribers. whatever, I don't know what they're called, patrons, I guess, Patreon patrons or something like that, where like each episode on YouTube, if you were a patron, would give them $2 or $3 a video or something like that. But there's one YouTube channel I follow. It's a husband and wife and their young son who's like 7 or 8 months old. They literally live out at sea and they just do videos from their boat. And it's pretty interesting, but they have no other source of revenue. So they started a YouTube channel. They have a bunch of patrons. I think they probably make a few thousand dollars an episode, if not more, because they have that many patrons. But we have a long way to go before we get there.
Well, I'm not going to do anything as silly as live on a boat, but
yes.
I wanted to listen, if you got a business you need us to plug, we'll do it for cheap, but then we'll increase the rates. But hey, we'll give you the analysis now. We'll get you hooked, and then we'll advertise some Casper mattresses or something.
Sounds like a good plan. So what are your thoughts? I guess let's start off with night number one. I know my Congressman Ryan was in night number one. We had Marianne Williamson, and the two big ones were Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren. So what were your thoughts on night one of the CNN debates?
Well, you know, before we get into that, I just want to say about the debates. They really lasted. I want to say two things about Elizabeth Warren. They lasted a long time. I watched all of the first night and everything except for the last 15 minutes of the last night. But, man, 2.5 hours of debates, it became physically painful. I'm not even exaggerating when I say that. It was really, really tough to watch. But I did it for the listeners and for those sweet, sweet ad bucks from Casper Mattresses. That's the point one. And the second point I want to say, then I'll talk about the debate. But I thought the moderators were terrible on the first night. I mean, it seemed like every 2 seconds Jake Tapper was interrupting them to ask a question. And, you know, politicians like to bloviate, but that's what they're there. That's what I'm tuning in. I'm tuning in to hear these people bloviate. So, you know, I don't want to hear Jake Tapper. I'm not voting Jake Tapper for president. I just thought CNN was obnoxious. They toned it down on the second night. It wasn't as bad. But, man, that first night was rough. But that's the preliminary stuff. I don't know what you think about that.
Yeah, no, in particular, I thought Dom Lemon's questions, especially in the second hour of each night regarding President Trump, and he just going after Trump in his questions is saying what he has been saying about Elijah Cummings and the squad as being racist. I thought that was pretty much uncalled for. It's a debate. You have an opinion show. You need to learn. You're in that position. You should know, be able to separate opinion from just a simple question. But when he started throwing the politics and then mixed his own political views on something, I thought that was unnecessary.
Yeah. Yeah. It was obnoxious, but I think that Jake Tapper committed the worst sin because he kept peppering them with questions, peppering them. And they didn't even let the candidate speak. It was just too much. But, so I think we could both agree the format was just pretty horrible all around. It was a terrible format. But
I do think I'll say this. I do think they need – and I think it's going to happen in the September debate or August debate, whatever one is next. They need to trim it down from 20 candidates because let's be real here. At least half of them have absolutely no chance.
Right.
And yeah, it's good to hear them. Now they've had two opportunities, and if they don't get any traction after the first two debates – I think they need to see the writing on the wall and hang it up.
Yeah, we need a bonfire of the vanities of the candidates because there's just too many of them. I should run for president as a Democrat right now. I think I'd have as good of a chance as Tim Ryan, probably a slightly better chance than John Delaney. Yeah, definitely. I could make a cooler T-shirt than Michael Bennett. There's just too many of them.
Mm-hmm. No, I agree 100% with you on that.
Okay, so you wanted my opinion on night one, and I filibustered enough to pull up the list of candidates on night one. Night one was the socialist sparring where you had Bernie Sanders and Elizabeth Warren at the center, basically tag teaming the second tier. I think we'll do it candidate by candidate. I think Warren and Biden both did very well. I think Biden showed a lot more energy at this debate than or sorry, not Biden, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders. Sorry, I'm already getting the old white guys confused. I thought that they showed Sanders and Warren both showed a lot of energy. I thought that they were compelling compared to some of the other people. And, you know, we can get into the policy later, but I thought they were more exciting than everybody else on that stage. Pete Buttigieg is just a continual disappointment. He's a little too polished. It's like he's running for president so he can brush up his resume before he applies to Goldman Sachs to be a partner in their M&A division. So it's a little creepy. Beto O'Rourke is weird. I wouldn't trust my children with him. I feel like he would just whack the baby and send the baby flying across the room while he's, you know, lecturing us on the border or something, because his hands are just out of control. Amy Klobuchar, she's perpetually angry, and her right eyebrow is always elevated. It's weird. I'm scared of her. I mean, if the New York Times reports are true, where she makes her staffers eat with a comb, that's scary to me. John Delaney, you know, if he's the great moderate hope, then the moderates should just give it in. I mean, he's just kind of bland. He's unlikable. He's very corporate. Hire you so that he could make the quarterly profit report. And he's running as a Democrat. It doesn't gel well. John Hickenlooper, John Lickenhooer, in the sense of who is he? I mean, I know who he is, but didn't really leave an impression for me. Steve Bullock was another great moderate hope from Governor Montana. He was kind of wacky. He reminded me of an inflatable tube man because his arms were constantly flailing all about. I don't think he did very well. And then there's there's Tim Ryan and Marianne. And I want to spend a little bit more time on these, and then I'll turn it over to you, Michael. Tim Ryan, I thought it was interesting. He kept clashing with Bernie Sanders. I don't think that was intentional, but the moderator set him up. He did okay. I thought he did better than night one, but he really didn't catch fire. And it was kind of awkward at the beginning of the debate when he didn't have his hand over his heart. Now, I don't think he's a communist or a terrorist or anything like that. But I do think that he kind of like just was so nervous he forgot to do it. And it looked bad optics. And then finally, there's my hero, Marianne Williamson, who is like the 1960s flower power girls. You know, they all grew up, they got 401ks, but they still have some of that independent spirit. And, you know, they made a lot of money on California real estate. And they watch a lot of Oprah, or they don't actually watch Oprah, they read the books that she recommends. That's Marianne Williamson to the T, right? She believes in healing crystals and that. But the thing about her is that she has a bit of charisma, and there's something to her. I think she did very, very well, and she makes sense sometimes. I mean, she, you know, everybody wants to laugh at her, but some of the things that she's saying are kind of appealing, and I think she's going to go pretty far. I don't think she'll be able to seal the deal, but I think she's going to go far. So that's everybody.
All right. So let me go through the list, and I have it kind of in a different order because I'm going off of a CNBC article here, but nonetheless, let's start off with Marianne Williamson. I agree with you. I thought she came across as having probably, to me, the best performance of any of them, or the one who gained the most as a result, because, again, going into the first debate, I had no clue who she was. After the first debate, I found a lot of what she said to be rather out there in left field, but kind of interesting that I wanted to hear more. And I thought she did quite well. I don't quite agree with a lot of what she said, and I think one of the most interesting quotes of the night was when she started going into her calculation of what reparations should be for African Americans, talking about what $200 billion was not enough, but if you're between $200 and $500 billion, it might be something we could justify, and it's right at this time. But I'd agree with you. I think she gained a lot, and I do think she's going to make the next debate. I don't see her being their nominee, but I think she's going to make some noise. And I think at times the CNN moderators wanted to avoid her because maybe they just think she's kind of just way out there. It's one thing to be ultra liberal, but she's just kind of on her own little island. But again, I think she did quite well.
I have her T-shirt, and I want to say, you know, I reviewed the Tim Ryan shirt, I think, in the last podcast, and I'll review the Marianne Williamson T-shirt. It's made in America. It's very soft, but unfortunately, it's not as soft as the Tim Ryan T-shirt.
too much cotton in there, not enough polyester?
Yeah, I think so. And but you know, I did read online that it has magical healing powers, and it's going to elevate my chakras to the seventh dimension. So I'm waiting to see if that comes through. But I, you know, there's potential.
Good. Well, hopefully it assists our podcast in gaining some traction and growing here in the months ahead.
Yeah, so, absolutely.
So that's Marion Williamson. Tim Ryan, yeah, the optics of not putting your hand over your heart for the national anthem, they were bad. I noticed it right away. I didn't think too much of it just because, it is what it is. I attend enough sporting events to know a lot of people don't put their hand over their heart for whatever reason for the national anthem, and that's fine. But you're running for president of the United States, and just a thing like that, a little bit of bad optics goes a long way. By the end of the debate, he was trending on Twitter. There is a big Fox News post about him not having his hand over his heart, and there are a number of tweets even from some liberals that I saw that were going after him for saying, hey, that's a bad look. And Dane, do you recall what his explanation was? I think he said it was just absent-mindedness or something like that. But nonetheless, I didn't think it looked real good.
Well, it's interesting that he said it was absent-mindedness, which given that he wrote a book on mindfulness, it's like he didn't even read his own book. Yeah, I mean, obviously the guy was nervous and he didn't do it. But, you know, if others didn't do it, it wouldn't be a thing. But it's just everybody had their hands on their heart except for him. And it looked really – it stood out dramatically. So I feel bad for the guy. He's obviously out of his league, to put it very bluntly.
Yeah, and you mentioned how he was going after Bernie Sanders. I thought at times some of these outsiders were maybe trying to go after some of the bigger candidates, first to make a little bit of name for themselves, and second to hope to have an opportunity to have a rebuttal because they know the moderators aren't going to go back to them for another half hour, which may or may not have been the case with Tim Ryan. I think, again, but I thought he made some good points in the first debate. I thought he made some good points again in the second debate, but I think his days are very numbered. I don't see him making the next debate. I think I read that in order to make the next debate, you need to have at least 2% in the polls and have at least 200,000 donations from, you know, different people across the country. I don't see how he gets there. I don't know what your thoughts are on that.
Yeah, he has about $800,000 in his campaign war chest, which is just nothing, right? If you're running for president, I don't think he has enough individual donors. I think he has around 13,000 individual donors, and you need a lot more than that. So it's kind of sad. I think he would have done better. I think this whole campaign was about him trying to angle for the vice presidency. And I think that the fact that he got destroyed by Tulsi and then kind of beat down by Bernie just shows he wasn't ready for prime time. He would have been better had he not run for president. He would have had a better chance of getting the vice president position, which is what he really wants, had he not even run for president in the first place.
Yeah, I would agree with a lot of that because he was in the running. I recall articles about him being in the running when Hillary was deciding on her vice presidential candidate. And yeah, after these performances, I don't see him, whoever the Democrats end up picking, even though it might make sense politically insofar as he's from the Rust Belt in a state that may or may not be a must-win anymore because I think it is trending more to the right, but in a Absolutely. Part of the country where he might be able to gain traction with those swing voters that flipped from Obama to Trump in Pennsylvania and in Michigan and maybe even so far as Wisconsin. But again, I don't see him getting that. I imagine probably within the next 6 weeks, especially if he doesn't make the next debate, I'd imagine he'll drop out and then focus on reelection in the 13th district here in Ohio. So we'll see what happens there.
I thought it was the 16th district, but yeah.
Whatever it is, I should know. It is my congressional district, but I'm not 100% sure on that. So next is Senator Amy Klobuchar. I don't have much to say other than I liked a lot of what she said in the first debate, a lot of her ideas. Maybe she comes across as somewhat pragmatic, somewhat reasonable, and not so extreme. But your description of her with her eyebrow was hilarious. I don't have much else to say about her. She's not going to go very far, but I do think she's somebody in the Senate that can work across party lines. Not that her state necessarily is, it's definitely a Democratic state. It went for Mondale in what, 84 or whatever, 80. What year was it? I should know this stuff.
Mondale was 84.
84. And in the Reagan election, we won 49 of the 50 states. But it was pretty close in the last election. I do see her as somebody that could work across party lines. And maybe, I think she was on the Senate Judiciary Committee. And whenever I'd listen to her, because I wouldn't necessarily be watching at work, I'd be listening to the questioning, especially during the Kavanaugh hearing. She came across as pretty reasonable, so I got to give her – I do have some respect for her in regards to that.
You know, she is a shrewd politician. I don't think anybody can doubt that. She's very shrewd. Her issue is the zeitgeist with the Democrats is not for a moderate, pragmatic person. That's kind of boring right now, right? They want somebody that's going to push and push hard. And I actually think that American politics is getting rid of the quote-unquote moderates who – and this is room for another podcast. I don't think the moderates are actually that moderate. I think they're very extreme. They just – they cloak their moderation in terms of language and rhetoric that makes it seem like that they're very moderate. But if you look at American economic and social policy, the moderates have done some pretty hardcore things. But that's for another debate. That's another podcast.
Not good points. Mayor Pete. You said it best. I think he's overly polished. I'm impressed with the fact that he's the mayor of South Bend, Indiana, and he's made it this far. But I do view him as being ultra polished and too, you know, knowing exactly what to say and having these clever remarks. He's not the right fit in 2020 for the Democrats. Beto O'Rourke or Beto or whatever his name is, I agree. He is creepy. There's nothing there. How he came close to upsetting Ted Cruz in 2018, I'll never figure out. I don't see what the big deal about this guy is. He comes across as maybe the new JFK, but there's no substance there. I don't know what this guy has done. I thought he was strange in the debate once again, and yeah, he doesn't stand a chance.
Yeah, so Beto's kind of fake news, and he's fake news in the sense that he married a multi-billion-dollar heiress to a real estate fortune in Texas. So he married into wealth. I think he may have come from money. I'm not sure. He really had no idea what he was doing with his life. He's reasonably good-looking, and he's somewhat articulate, you know, in like, you know, smaller scale settings. So he was able to win a congressional seat, kind of governed as a somewhat moderate guy. Somewhat of a centrist, and then came close beating one of the most unlikable guys in the Senate, Ted Cruz, who has a very interesting personality, right? Somebody once described him as oily, and I mean, regardless, I'm not even talking politics, right? It's just his personality is kind of off-putting, right? He's kind of toned it down a bit recently, but back in the day. Anyway, so he came really close against beating Ted Cruz, but that was it. And ever since then, he's done nothing. He lost, though. Don't forget, losers can't be winners, okay? If you lose a Senate election, you can't then therefore run for president. It kind of defeats your whole argument. Oh, I lost this election, but don't worry, I can win an even bigger election? Not so much.
Yeah, I think there's that false hope there that Texas is going to flip in 2020 and he's the man to help flip the state. It's not going to happen. Moving on real quickly, Hickenlooper, he's former Governor Kasich of Ohio, best bud. They were on some speaking tour after President Trump was elected. He doesn't stand a chance. John Delaney, I was surprised with how much time he had in the debate in terms of receiving questions. I thought that was ironic. I don't know if you have read anything into that, but did you notice that as well?
Yeah, he must have bribed somebody at CNN to get all that speaking time. It was weird. He was just constantly – it was like the John Delaney hour. I was shocked at how much time he had. And look, you know, he's kind of a reasonable guy, but again, he has that corporate air to him, right? He definitely seems like the guy in the glass corner office who's just plotting ways to fire you before your pension kicks in, so he doesn't have to pay it. That's John Delaney, right? He's real nice. Hey, how you doing? How you doing? And then, you know, you go send your cube, and he's like, how quickly can we fire this guy so we can improve our profit margin? That's him. I hate to be that guy, but that's John Delaney.
No, that's fine. Montana Governor Steve Bullock, he kind of has an interesting voice to him. Kind of came across as sort of unique. Doesn't stand a chance either. Again, it's another one of those instances. It's a red state that he's won, I think, three elections in, and that's fine. But he's not going to go very far. And then to the big head honchos, Bernie Sanders, Elizabeth Warren. I'll say this about Bernie and Elizabeth. Yeah, they definitely got their points across. I view Sanders as extremely – he comes across as very angry, and his arms are always moving up and down and this and that. But my biggest takeaway, he never smiles. He just always seems very angry and upset. And I think that's always how he's been. But when I really wanted to sit down and take this debate in and take good notes, that was my biggest takeaway from that man. I haven't necessarily listened to him since or over his history. Maybe that's just his personality, but I don't know.
You know, what's interesting about Bernie is, first of all, I think everybody could agree that his time was 4 years ago. His time is not now, right? He kind of missed the boat, and he's just starting to show, even though I think he's still pretty sharp relative to somebody like Biden. But what's interesting about Bernie is that personally he's not very charismatic, but his genuine belief in his ideology and his ideas, in the freshness of those ideas. I mean, we haven't seen, you know, that extreme left-wing ideas in popular currency in a while in the main political debate. That gives him a sort of energy that other candidates don't have. So, like, he should on paper be very unappealing. But he's kind of got you're paying attention to him, right? Mm-hmm. When you hear somebody like Delaney talk or Bullock, your eyes glass over. When Hickenlooper opens his mouth, you're dead asleep. Talking, waving his arms, you're paying attention. He gets you excited. So he's got potency. I think it's diluted. I think it's his moments past. But I give him credit. He was awake this debate. He was obviously more caffeinated. And he's a figure, right? You're paying attention to him. He's got charisma. He's one of the top tier.
Yeah, absolutely. He's definitely in the top tier, and I think he held his own, and he'll be in it for a long time. But I don't see him necessarily ever getting, especially if we remain with five or six top tier candidates for quite some time. I never see him getting more than 20 or 25% of the vote. But we'll see what happens in terms of who drops out in the long run. Elizabeth Warren. I thought at times she never really answered certain questions of her. Maybe that's just her personality. Again, like I said, I was really trying to pay close attention to how these candidates performed and how they answered questions. And that was one big thing. I know my wife was watching it with me, and she kept saying she's just not answering the questions. But then again, what politician really ever does answer the questions? So I thought the biggest takeaway, the one who gained the most in the first debate, was Marianne Williamson. I think it elevated her where she will make the next debate in terms of who struggled or who are the big losers. I hate to say it, but I don't see Congressman Ryan making it to the next debate. I think that if you want to call it a gaffe or whatever, in terms of not putting your hand over your heart, it resonated with some people for whatever reason. It didn't really bother me, but I noticed it. I don't see him making it to the next debate. So that's kind of my winners and losers of night one.
I just want to say one real quick point on night one before we close. And I basically agree, especially with your take, that Marianne Williamson was the big winner. I think Elizabeth Warren needs to be studied more. And she's a fascinating, fascinating figure. Obviously, highly intelligent. Lots of charisma. I think she's going places. I think she came across very strongly in this debate. I think her big problem, though, is that she seems very angry and very scoldy, right? So as explained to somebody else earlier today, all the WASPs that used to govern our country, the white Anglo-Saxon Protestants, right, they have this puritanical background, and they kind of evolved, and you can actually trace the Episcopal Church this way. They kind of evolved into this, you know, modern progressivism as their new religion, and they're all very woke. And Elizabeth Warren is like wokeness made flesh, wokeness incarnate. And she has this kind of waspy air to her, which I do not think is going to play well in the Rust Belt and other areas. So I think if you are like, if you, you know, if you're from Shaker Heights, Ohio, or if you're from Squirrel Hill in Pittsburgh, I'm trying to think of some other name, the Upper East Side in New York, or Cambridge in Massachusetts, Elizabeth Warren is your girl. But if you're from somewhere like Parma or Youngstown or Scranton, Elizabeth Warren is somebody that just is going to get on your nerves. And it has nothing to do with the policies. It's everything to do with the personality. So I'm fascinated by her. But, yeah, that's my final point.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. I see how she is, I guess you could say, quote, unquote, darling of the left. But in terms of somebody who's born and raised and lived in Northeast Ohio my entire life, she comes across to me as at times inauthentic, especially like she's had some videos on Facebook and on Twitter where she's just like cracked open a beer and tried to, I don't know what she was trying to do, but it's like she was trying too hard. I don't know if she's trying to connect with younger voters or a certain type of voter. I don't know. Maybe I'm reading too much into it, but I do agree. I think her struggles would be more into the Rust Belt. I think she would do well, especially out in the Northeast and out on the West Coast and maybe other parts of the country. But the states the Democrats need to win in 2020, she'd be a risky choice as far as I'm concerned. But that's all I really have to say about night one. So I don't know if you want to take it away on night two.
Yeah, night two. Night two. I thought night two was – everybody was fighting with everybody. I should take that back. It was a total free-for-all against Joe Biden. Everybody was fighting against Biden, although there were some side skirmishes going on. And, you know, obviously Biden's the front runner. He's the former vice president. He's a fixture of American politics, so he dominates it. It's an interesting paradox. Biden is somebody whose age is really starting to show. He's starting to slur words. He's starting to make mistakes. He's starting to stumble over thoughts, etc. I mean, he's clearly he's not the young and youthful Biden of 2016 or 2012 or anything like that. But at the same time, he has a unique strength in that he's the most call it moderate guy on the stage, and his age is weighing him down. But that moderation is kind of weighing him up because he seems relatively sane against some of these people and some of their plans. And they all attacked him, and I think he came away from that debate not necessarily unscathed, but not as damaged as he should be. It's like the battleship took hits. It's got holes in the hull going under yet. That's my take about Biden. And we can get into the other guy. I'm curious as to what you think about Papa Joe.
Yeah, I thought early on, especially I believe the first topic was on healthcare, he did really well. I think where he's at his best – is more on the rehearsed remarks and where, like you said, he starts slurring and stumbling over his words. I noticed that more when he's has a pointed question directed at him. And I actually have a clip that where I thought when he started to go downhill in the debate was the start of the second hour when immigration came up. I have a clip here. I want to play it. It's Mayor de Blasio from New York going after Joe Biden. Let's listen to it, and then we can discuss.
Vice President Biden, I didn't hear your response when the issue came up of all those deportations. You were Vice President of the United States. I didn't hear whether you tried to stop them or not using your power, your influence in the White House. Did you think it was a good idea, or do you think it was something that needed to be stopped?
Mr. The President came along, and he's the guy that came up with the idea, first time ever, of dealing with the Dreamers. He put that in the law. He talked about a comprehensive plan, which he put on the laid before the Congress, saying that we should find a pathway to citizenship for people. He said we should up the number of people that we're able to bring into this country. Lastly, he also pointed out that we should go to the source of the problem and fix it where people were leaving in the first place. So he did compare him to Donald Trump, I think is absolutely bizarre.
But I don't hear an answer from the vice president. I'm confused. I asked the vice president point blank, did he use his power to stop those deportations? He went right around the question. Mr. Vice President, you want to be president of the United States. You need to be able to answer the tough questions. I guarantee you, if you're debating Donald Trump, he's not going to let you off the hook. So did you say those deportations were a good idea? Or did you go to the president and say, this is a mistake, we shouldn't do it? Which one?
I was vice president. I am not the president. I keep my recommendation to him in private. Unlike you, I expect you would go ahead and say whatever was said privately with him. That's not what I do. What I do say to you is he moved to fundamentally change the system. That's what he did. That's what he did. But much more has to be done. Much more has to be done.
I still don't hear an answer.
Senator Booker, please respond.
So that is New York Mayor Bill de Blasio going after Vice President Biden. Yeah, I thought that was interesting because they went after former President Obama's immigration policy in terms of deportations in his time in the White House compared to Donald Trump's first 2 years in the White House. Do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, one thing that keeps coming up is that Obama deported a lot of people, which is actually false because they changed the standards on what constituted deportation. So if you were turned away at the border, they counted that as a deportation. So they changed the standard, and it's kind of misleading. Now, I'm not doing that to defend Obama nor to attack him. It's a really crucial point. But you made a point earlier that Biden was strongest on health care in the beginning of the debate, and then he started to decline. I absolutely agree with that. I thought he came out swinging. He did really well. He kind of beat back Kamala, and then he just kind of lost steam. And his answer was kind of incoherent, the one you just played, where he's like, what, said in private or something like that. I don't know. And DACA, by the way, wasn't really encoded in law. It was an executive order. So the idea that DACA – nothing ever passed the House and the Senate and was signed by the president granting DACA legal status. It was all executive order done. But yeah.
Yeah, I just thought, like you said in that answer, he wasn't making the best of sense. And I thought his response where he said that I was a vice president, he was the president, and I'd keep my opinions to myself. I thought that was an interesting response because depending on who would say that, I would expect some moderators to kind of hit home on that point. They're like, well, you're still the vice president. Why wouldn't you at least share your thoughts, at least offer a second opinion, especially on something as polarizing as immigration and whatever you want to call it, deportations or what have you. But I thought that's where he really struggled. But he did do well early on, and I think it was enough for him to get by where he didn't necessarily do great. He didn't necessarily do awful, but he did enough where nobody really, I thought, took him down from that mantle of being the front runner.
Yeah, agreed. I think that's the best way to put it. He kind of just survived. You know, he's kind of wounded, but he's still number one. You know, I want to make this point really quick, and then we can get into the rest of the second night. I think that people tend to underestimate Joe Biden in the sense that, you know, what's boosting Joe Biden is Black American support, right? I think roughly 50% of Black Americans that vote Democrat are currently supporting Joe Biden, and they're a huge chunk of his support. So I think a lot of pundits in that, they tend to undercount or underestimate that support, and I think it's crucial, and I just don't see them defecting to any other candidate. So I think Biden has a really solid core of his base. And, you know, for all the talk we give to Elizabeth Warren, Bernie Sanders, and all these guys, I think a lot of their base is online. It's young people that use social media. And so the real support on the ground is overamplified, right? And the parallel to this would be, like, you know, it's kind of the inverse of the Trump phenomenon. The Trump phenomenon was, you know, nobody in the punditry or the media liked Trump at all, but he had a lot of quiet support out there. Somebody like Buttigieg, it's the opposite. Like, I don't think there's a lot of Buttigieg voters out there, but I think there's a lot of media people and Twitter personalities in that like Buttigieg. So the point, I guess, at the end of the day is I think they're undercounting the strength of Joe Biden because of this.
I would agree, and when we get into our power rankings, you'll note that I do have the Biden rising in my rankings.
Okay. Yeah, we'll get to that. I'm excited to hear that. One more point on the second night. I think everybody else was kind of bland. Can I talk about how Yang is extremely overrated?
Yes, please do.
So here's the thing, right? Yang was popular online, the Yang Gang and the pink hats. He kind of surged. He went to like 2 or 3% in the polls. But I look, Yang's platform is we're going to give everybody $1,000, right? Somebody offering you free money should be really popular. That's the easiest. Like, hey, I'm giving you $1,000. All you got to do is vote for me. That's the easiest sell in the world. But Yang is so uncharismatic and kind of pedantic that he's so overrated. And he turns everything to this UBI shtick and universal basic income. And it's such a bad idea. I mean, forget the whole, socialism thing. Forget that for a second. The big problem afflicting America is not a lack of income, especially in poverty levels, right? The big problem is a lack of purpose. It's not that people don't have money to support themselves. It's that people don't have a purpose. They lost their job and they have no reason for live. That's why, you know, we have the deaths of despair where alcoholism is rising, drug overdoses are rising, suicides are rising. The Midwest got all their jobs outsourced and a lot of people became permanently unemployed. They can't find function in this society and they're sad as a result. Giving them $1,000 a month is not going to change that.
Yeah, I don't really see. There's a couple people I follow on Twitter that are all about this guy, and I'm thinking to myself, this and I don't want to share who these individuals are, but they come from a business background, and just I look at things from the perspective of how are you going to pay for it? I don't know really if he said exactly how he's going to pay for $1,000 a month, but something about him, I don't like the idea of just giving away money. It seems like it's just like you said, you're giving away money, you should get a lot of votes. I don't know. His whole platform is based on that. But
yeah,
I don't know.
And the other thing I thought was interesting is that like he's like, oh, automation's going to take away all these jobs. And when we say automation's going to take jobs, we're obviously talking about low-skill jobs, right? It's not going to automate tax accountants or lawyers. I mean, maybe one day, but not in the immediate future. But then at the second, you know, he's like, that's horrible. It's going to lead to mass unemployment. But, oh, by the way, we need total open borders. It's like, wait a minute. We're going to lose a bunch of unskilled jobs. We're going to have a surplus availability of labor. But at the same time, we need total open borders where our immigration system, as it's currently constructed, is skewed towards low-skilled labor. Doesn't make any sense. I think he's a meme. He's not a very good one. I think he's stale. And I'm selling Yang. I'm selling the stock. I'm shorting it. It's like going to go bust.
I agree with selling it, but I do think he'll have enough support and enough of those, I don't want to say cult following, but those devout supporters that he might have enough to make the next debate. I don't see him have any chance whatsoever of gaining much traction outside of that. But I do see him at least making the third debate whenever that is.
Agreed. I think you're right. You're right. Anybody else you want to review from the second night? I only got two of them, I think.
Well, I'll go through the list real quick. Julian Castro, nothing really was said there that wowed me. Doesn't stand a chance. Cory Booker, I think at times somebody was messaging me the night or last night regarding it. And it says he tries to be too much like Obama. I would tend to agree there. Jay Inslee, no chance. De Blasio, I don't think – from all I've read, he hasn't done very much for the city of New York, and he's not very well-liked there. So I don't see – go ahead.
I'm not trying to interrupt you, but he's an incompetent mayor. Look, you can have elect a communist, right? But if the communist can clean the roads and make sure that the snow is plowed and the sidewalks are paved – hey, you can make a compelling case. But the worst is you elect a communist. Bill de Blasio is no doubt a communist. You elect a communist, and then he's incompetent on top of that. That's the worst, and that's Bill de Blasio.
It's a good way to sum it up. Moving on, Michael Bennett. We were talking about eyebrows in the first debate with Klobuchar. He's got some interesting eyebrows. I was surprised with him. He actually got some points in, and he spoke a lot more than I thought. He doesn't have a chance whatsoever, but I was surprised with how much time he was able to receive from the moderators. Kirsten Gillibrand or Gillibrand, I see why she wins in New York. I don't think she would win in any somewhat red or purple state. No way. And the last two I want to really cover, because we did talk about Joe Biden, Tulsi Gabbard and Kamala Harris. So I had Kamala Harris or Kamala as my number one. I thought she really took a beating in the debate, especially when Tulsi Gabbard, who I like, and a lot of the – I said this in the first podcast, and I'll say it again. A lot of the conservatives I follow on Twitter really, for some reason or another, really like Tulsi Gabbard. And I thought her shots on Kamala did some great damage to her chances. I just wanted to mention one thing. Not that I never gamble in terms of – or gamble with – politics, but there's a Predictit website that I follow, and usually when people's money is on the line, it means something. And Kamala at one point in the past week was virtually up there in terms of maybe number one or number two. She took quite the hit in the last 48 hours. Joe Biden now is back ahead, Elizabeth Warren a close second, then Kamala Harris and Bernie Sanders right after her. But I thought Harris, I liked a lot of how she, especially during the Kavanaugh hearings, how she went after Kavanaugh with her questioning. You could tell she was an attorney general. But in this debate, I thought she lacked a lot of substance. And when she got a lot of attacks from all sides, and when Tulsi Gabbard took some shots at her, she really didn't have a great response. And I think it's going to hurt her in the long run. She's going to need to do well, I think, in the coming debate to kind of regain her credibility a bit, because I did think Gabbard landed some big blows on her.
Yeah, I thought Tulsi is a compelling person, and what's refreshing is that she is an anti-war Democrat, and the Democrats were the anti-war party when we were growing up. And then Obama got elected. He proceeded to blow up Libya, tried to blow up Syria, used drones to blow up Sudan or Yemen? I think it was Yemen. Troop surge in Afghanistan. And then Democrats, you know, stopped being the anti-war party, right? And then Trump kind of ran on an anti-war platform. And Democrats all of a sudden became like, well, if Trump likes it, it's really bad, so we need to blow up half the planet. Which is dumb, right? It was dumb when the Republicans under Bush were doing it, and it's dumb now. And Tulsi is compelling that she speaks out against it, and that she was a military veteran. She served in Iraq. She's someone very articulate. She's good looking. I'm not supposed to say that, right? But she is very good looking and very smart. And she took down Kamala Harris. Tulsi's big problem, though, is that the media does not like her. The media hates
Tulsi. That's a great point.
They slur her as an Assad flunky and all this other stuff because she's such a threat to the Democratic establishment. I think she could catch on, but her biggest problem is the media will never, never, never support her. So she's screwed.
Yeah. I mean, I think she comes across as very credible, very articulate, very reasonable to a person like me who is, you know, fairly conservative, but watching her, I'm thinking to myself, she is, of the 20 candidates that I've seen in the past two nights, the one who is completely different and doesn't sound like they're way out there in left field. Now, she definitely has some pretty far left ideas on some issues, and that's fine. But I honestly do not understand why the media has something against her. They didn't give her many questions, and – yeah, and I don't like to read too much in the whole social media and trending stuff, but I mean, she landed a huge blow on Kamala Harris last night, and I'm looking on Twitter thinking, oh, she'll be trending on Twitter. It never showed up, I think, until like the middle of the night. Again, whatever that means. I don't know if it means anything, but it certainly seems like you said, the establishment wants no part of her. I don't know if it's because some on the right find her tolerable or what it is, or they feel like she is a threat in some way. But I thought her stock rose, but I don't know if it will be enough for her to make the next debate. I think she might be able to get the donations. I don't know if her poll numbers will be enough to rise. And I'm not even sure where they're at necessarily.
I think she makes the next debate.
Makes the next debate, but I guess we'll see.
Yeah, I think she does. Some of the like the Hickenlopers of the world drop out, but I think Tulsi will stay in.
Did we miss anybody? I think that's it. I just wanted to see before we move on if you have any thoughts on your presidential power rankings and if anything changed for you.
Sure. I think that Kamala Harris went down a notch. I don't remember what my exact ranking was, but I still think it's Biden number one, Elizabeth Warren number two, Kamala Harris number three, and Bernie Sanders number four, with a wild card, Tulsi Gabbard, Marianne Williamson, John Delaney, somebody like that, pick your poison, as number five, or Julian Castro. They'd be in the all tied for fifth place. That's how I would rank them.
Yeah, so for me, I had Kamala Harris as my number one, and I thought the blows from Gabbard were significant. And for somebody like me who thought Kamala was quite authentic, I viewed her as inauthentic and lacking substance. And for those reasons, I dropped her all the way down to fourth in my rankings. And I thought Biden's performance was enough to maybe alleviate some fears from the first debate that he is not nearly as sharp. I still think he's not as sharp as he once was, but I thought early on he did enough to help him at least show the American people that, hey, I haven't completely lost it. I still have it up there. So I moved him back up to my number one. I have him kind of as my 1A with Elizabeth Warren as my 1B. Then I have Bernie Sanders as third, Kamala Harris as fourth. And I guess it's more of a hopeful mix for five. I'll have Tulsi Gabbard or Marianne Williamson. But I definitely had some shifting going around. I thought after this debate, and obviously we'll see what happens in the weeks ahead leading up to the next debate, whenever that is. But that's kind of where I see it right now.
Okay, yeah, I would agree. I think that's fair. I think that, you know, the big thing for these debates is the second tier and breaking out. And I think somebody like Marianne Williamson, Tulsi, they're starting to break out a little bit. Whether that can be sustained is an open question, but not so bad if you're in their position.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, think how far they came or they've come from coming in. Again, I'd be hard-pressed to think more than 5% of Americans knew who Marianne Williamson was. Maybe you knew. I had no clue who she was, and I follow politics pretty closely. I know she's an author and all. No clue who she was. And for her to be able to make this run like she has is quite remarkable. And although I don't have Mayor Pete in my top five, again, mayor of a small city in Indiana, to see what he's done, kind of it's rather remarkable in my eyes. And it goes to show that really if you have some sort of background, some sort of platform in place, who knows? You could make a run at now. Neither of them will end up being their nominee, but I got to give them credit where credit's due. Especially considering somebody like my congressman, who's been congressman I think now 17 years, Polish politician, is struggling as much as he is, and for some, and I guess if you want to call them outsiders to be making noise like this, I got to give them credit where credit's due.
Yeah, absolutely.
So, anything else on the debates before we move on?
No, I think that's good. I think that covers it for now.
All right. So next topic, I just want to talk briefly about. I got to give Dane credit; he was 100% right. Regarding Bob Mueller, I guess let's talk about the hearings themselves. In terms of Bob Mueller, I thought it's clear that he is aging quite a bit, and he is not sharp. And I do think that his unwillingness initially to testify publicly, I think maybe we now see why. He did not have a great grasp on the contents of the report, and I think it's evident that he was more so there to manage the entire operation but I don't think, and maybe he even acknowledged, that he did not write this report, and it was evident. And I think he did absolutely no favors, and I think the push to impeach President Trump, I've heard a lot less about it since the hearings. I think it's gone up in flames entirely, and now this 2020 election isn't going to be about – there might still be some investigation of President Trump. But this idea of impeachment, I think it's completely disintegrated. I think this is going to now be an election based entirely on the issues. But I want to at least hear what you have to say about Bob Mueller.
Look, we should put this at the end of the podcast because it's good material for people to fall asleep. The Mueller investigation, the Russian investigation, was always so hyped with so little to show for it. Think about it, people. Trump can't keep his mouth shut for more than like 10 minutes. And yet people were assuming or theorizing that he was a secret agent of the KGB and he was getting money from the Russians to run for president and destabilize the U.S. None of it makes any sense. If you spend like 10 minutes just thinking deeply about it, like it's just a joke, right? And it was always a joke. And then once it was proven that there was no Russian collusion, then it was like, oh, well, Trump obstructed justice. It's like, well, did you prosecute him for it? Well, no, because he really technically didn't obstruct justice, but he kind of maybe did. I don't know. Where's it going? It's going nowhere. So the Mueller testifying to Congress, I had low expectations for, and those low expectations were met. It's sad the guy is aging. Nothing's ever going to come to this out of this. It's dead. It's dead. People need to move on. It's sad that, you know, we're only given a limited amount of time on this planet, and some people spent the irretrievable hours and seconds of their life intensely following and reading about this Mueller investigation when it went nowhere.
Yeah, great points. I thought it was interesting. I saw yesterday that Rachel Maddow's show, which at one point was neck and neck with, I think, Sean Hannity's show on Fox News as the number one show on cable news, her ratings are down considerably, and I think she shed something to the effect of 700,000 or 800,000 viewers since the Mueller, since Bob Barr came out, or Bill Barr, attorney. What is it, Bill or Bob? I should know this.
Bob Mueller.
No, I'm talking about the attorney general. Is it Bill Barr?
Bill
Barr. Bill Barr. Since he came out, because every single night, like you just said, she wasted so much time investigating Mueller, and all you'd hear about on CNN, breaking news, Mueller this, Mueller that, it completely went up in flames. And it was really interesting watching the analysis after the hearings. I saw on ABC, the one reporter said there's absolutely no chance at impeachment. Chuck Todd, of all people, who's way out there in left field, said how big of a disaster it was. There is other ones saying how the optics were horrible for the Democrats. I listened to it at work, and then at lunch I listened to it on the radio, and then when I came back, I listened some more, and that night I watched highlights. You could hear Bob Mueller stumbling over the words. But when you actually even saw the optics of him visually, just looking at times very confused, I kind of felt bad for him. And if you go back on YouTube and even watch Bob Mueller from 10 years ago to now, you could see considerable aging. And in much lesser case, you could say the same with Joe Biden. But Bob Mueller struggled, and I feel bad for him because he was somebody who's well-respected, it seems, from both sides. And he just didn't have it. He did not have command. He struggled. He couldn't answer basic questions about what was in the report. And anybody who has any hopes of Donald Trump getting impeached now, I think you have to give it up. And all along I've said to myself, if you think Donald Trump's so vulnerable, beat him in 2020. Impeachment hearings aren't going to help you politically. If anything, they're going to hurt you politically. You have a prime opportunity in 2020 to beat a president who has struggled, I think, to even eclipse 45% approval ratings in the Real Clear Politics polling averages. He's beatable. He's very beatable, and yet they were all over this idea of impeachment and trying to get him out of office. Well, if you want him out, then you're going to end up with Pence, who I know the left can't stand. So, again, like you said, it was kind of a snoozer. Not much has come of it. Bob Mueller's name never came up last night in the debates. I didn't expect it to, but you know, after hearing his name for every single night for 2 years on cable news, I found that to be quite interesting.
Yeah, it's just, look, there's a limited amount of time on this planet. If you spent it following Bob Mueller's investigation in any way, shape, or form, you lost that time, and you lost it for no gain whatsoever. I really feel sorry for you, and may God have mercy on your soul. And that's all I have to say about that.
Very good. So last set of topics, if you want to call them that, is our questions that we've received from some of our listeners. So again, if you have any questions, send us messages on Facebook. You can post them on our Facebook page, email them info@mvred.com, or you could even tweet them at us. It's at mvredblog on Twitter. So our first question comes in, and here, let me read it word for word here. The whole country has progressed since Trump has become president, but the Mahoning Valley continues to fall further and further behind the rest of the state and country. Trump made many promises while in the Valley, and many have not come true. Do you see Trump's red wave in the Valley coming to an end in the next election with these empty promises? And the person asking the question specifically was referencing in part General Motors in Lordstown, which has gone idle, it looks like in the process of being possibly sold off. So I'll let you touch this one first, and being that I live here and I'm around these people, I'll follow up with you.
Yeah, so here's how I would put it, right? I just went to the Federal Reserve website and I pulled up the data on manufacturing employees in the United States. And under Trump's term, we've gone from 12.368 million to 12.854. So we've gained about 500,000 manufacturing jobs in the United States, okay? Did Trump make a ridiculous promise to not sell your house? Look, anybody that's investing in Youngstown real estate, it's not a good move. Let's just put it out there, okay? Did he overpromise? I think absolutely. But has he delivered for people in Youngstown and like areas like Youngstown? Yes. There's new economic data that just came out. Look up Mickey Koss, where it's showing that people over the last 2.5 years, people at the bottom income quintile, so that's the bottom 20% of income earners, are seeing their wages rise at the fastest pace that they have in over 2 decades. Wages are going up by over 3%. Manufacturing jobs have come back. And I think this is crucial. The tariffs should not be underestimated, and it resets the global order on trade, and it helps out workers. It helps low-skilled labor. It helps people that are doing manufacturing, people that are in services, etc. These tariffs are crucial. I cannot, you know, go on enough about how important these tariffs are against China, against all these countries in the steel and aluminum markets. So, you know, did Trump save Youngstown? No. But is Trump making progress in improving areas like Youngstown? Yes. And then there's one final point I want to make. You know, Youngstown's problems, a lot of it are from the government of the Mahoning Valley. If you're building a new factory, why would you in a million years build it in Youngstown, Ohio? Seriously. I mean, the education system is total trash. The income taxes are the highest income taxes in the entire state of Ohio. Mahoning County roads are falling apart despite having some of the highest sales taxes. I mean, there's no reason you would locate a business when you have other options in Mahoning Valley. So I think the Mahoning Valley has fallen behind because of its poor, poor leadership. Trump can't be held responsible for that. Could he do more? Yes. Does he need to do more? Absolutely. Did he overpromise? Sure. But has he won a lot of victories for people like Youngstown? Yes. The economic data supports that 100%. Will he do as well in Mahoning Valley the next time he runs? It depends who he runs against, but I think he'll do okay. He'll win Ohio.
Yeah, I'd agree. He'll win Ohio. And I do agree that when he said that about not selling your house, especially, I think that was, let's see, that was July of 2017 he said that, from what I can recall, or maybe about 2 years ago right now. It was late July of 2017, early August of 2017. I remember him specifically saying that. I said to myself, that could end up backfiring on him. And unfortunately, about 15 or 16 months later, GM announced that they were essentially closing the General Motors plant in Lordstown, which to me wasn't a total surprise, being that they cut the number of shifts from 3 down to 1. The writing seemed to be on the wall, especially just with buying preferences of Americans and people in general. They aren't buying as many cars. They're big on SUVs right now. Energy prices have remained relatively stable in the last few years, and SUVs have become more popular. So it's unfortunately for him, GM has closed the plant. Now, he has been pretty tough on General Motors CEO. Is it Mary Barra or Barra? I don't know. Regarding it, and he wanted to see another plant or another product go back there. It doesn't look like that's going to happen. And I know it's been rather interesting to see him actually tweet so much about this plant, because he knows how important it is. Because I think he doesn't specifically remember saying what he said, but I think he acknowledges the fact that Trumbull County is one of the counties that flipped so much from Obama to Trump in 4 years, and he has big-time support in that county, a county that I don't believe had gone Republican since maybe the Nixon election. So I think he really does want to deliver there. It'll be really interesting to see what happens with this workhorse. I think it's very – I hate to say it's iffy, but – the company itself is struggling financially. I know it's a new company being formed, and I know Vice President Pence this past week said they secured funding. I'll be interested to hear more details on that. I'm really curious to see if one of the major automakers isn't a big-time investor in that. We'll see what comes of it. But in terms of Trump's support locally, you made a great point in the last episode about listening to talk radio. I don't see his support falling apart here. I think it's still very strong. Now, will he be able to win Trumbull County, being especially with the job losses that have come as a result of GM? Maybe not. But I do think the state of Ohio overall is quite red. And let's not forget that in 2018, Mahoning County now has elected Don Manning to a state representative seat, and Michael Rowley won in the state Senate, or Don Manning was state House and Michael Rowley was state Senate. So clearly the area didn't falter in 2018. If anything, I thought it maybe moved a little bit further to the right on a local level. So we'll see what happens. I'm hoping something comes of this workhorse deal and maybe something else. It's my hope, because obviously I'm born and raised here in the Mahoning Valley, and I've worked here now for the past 6 years as a CPA, and it means a lot to me to see. I don't want to see this area fall apart. I still love this area, and we definitely have issues. I think Dane brought up some great points about the government issues. The roads are bad. There is an education lag, and unfortunately, it's one of those weird cycles where you have people going to Youngstown State. You have better quality students going to Youngstown State. When they graduate, where are they going to go? If there's not any opportunities for them, of course they're going to leave. And the brain drain has hurt this area considerably, because, again, what if you have a Fortune 500 company who wants to locate somewhere and you need an educated workforce? You're not going to find it necessarily in Youngstown, Ohio. So we'll see what happens. But I think his support remains quite strong here locally.
Yeah, I think at the end of the day, I think he'll be fine. He's going to win Ohio, and I think he has at least 45% support in the area.
Yeah, I agree with that, and especially with how far Columbia County has gone to the right, and Southern Mahoning County has kind of mimicked that, and it's gone pretty far to the right, that even maybe the more affluent suburbs, Canfield, Poland, I think remain quite strong for Trump, and maybe more of the blue collar Austin towns, maybe even Boardman, won't shift so much back to the Democrats. But it depends on who the Democratic candidate is. So that's all on that question. Next question we received was, what are your top five reasons why Donald Trump will win in 2020? I'm not going to share who sent this to me, but I know this who said it, and I know they're not a Trump supporter. So I just want to add that background here. So, Dan, what are your top five reasons why Donald Trump will win in 2020?
Well, I'm not actually sure that Donald Trump will win in 2020. After watching the debates, I think it's more likely than not. I don't think that it's any way a done deal. I think if he wins, it's going to be a combination of a lot of factors, but I don't have five, but I would say basically it comes down to the Democratic Party's moved too far to the left. They're still not appealing to the industrial Midwest. I think they're going to have problems turning out the black vote again. Kamala Harris and Cory Booker both have not caught on with black voters within the Democratic Party. So I think that there are issues there. And I think that Trump's pretty strong on, his personality is a big negative, clearly, but his issue set and where he stands on the issues, I think, is a broadly popular agenda. I think it's a 55%, 60% support. If you just were to take out his name and just put those issues on his positions on a piece of paper, I think he'd win a majority. So, again, I'm not convinced he wins. I think it's still close. I think it's more likely than not at this point. But I think that if he wins, it's going to be because of what I just talked about.
No, I agree with you as well that it's certainly not a given, and I don't want to imply that it's a given that Donald Trump wins re-election. I think maybe his odds are slightly better than 50-50 at this point, especially I think they went up slightly after nothing really came of the Mueller hearing and this whole impeachment talk, and now this whole race is going to become hopefully a race about issues. And after the last two nights watching the Democrats move further and further to the left, I think they're going to struggle winning back the Obama voters that shifted over to Donald Trump. They have done nothing, as far as I'm concerned, to try to win those voters back. And even though Congressman Ryan and some others are saying, hey, don't abandon the working class voters that we relied on for decades, those Rust Belt union workers, I don't think they've done much, if anything, to win them over. So I think that is why I think Donald Trump's odds of winning re-election are a little bit better than 50-50 right now. In terms of five reasons, I mean, obviously the economy overall nationwide, even though it's struggling here, would be up there. Stock market near record highs, although I know it went down quite a bit today after Donald Trump announced additional tariffs on China. I think that'll go back up in due time. I would say his immigration policy, he is calling or putting attention on a major crisis at the border. And I think he's making Americans recognize there's a problem that needs to be addressed, something that has been neglected by both parties for a number of years. So I think him calling to light the immigration issues is an issue. You said it best, the Democrats are moving way too far to the left to, like I said, win over the voters they need to win in 2020. And then the fifth thing, I do think his stance on trade is something that's not necessarily a Republican or Democratic issue. I think even Tim Ryan acknowledged that he agrees with Donald Trump on in some regard on the tariffs on China, and how we finally have a president who's willing to say, you know what, I'm willing to put tariffs on you. It may hurt us temporarily in the short term, but in the long run, it's something that needs to be done, because it's one of those things we can't keep kicking down the road. And we'll see what comes of it. I'm hopeful of a trade agreement. I don't know if anything will happen before the next election, because it seems like maybe it looks like they're going to be close on a deal, and then China does something that breaks their promise on a certain component of the deal, and it falls apart. So we'll see what happens there. But I'd say this. Donald Trump's odds may be slightly better than 50-50 right now, and those would be the five reasons why I think he would win re-election.
What's the last question? What's the third question?
This one's kind of out there, I will admit, but I wanted to share it nonetheless. It is something that I follow immensely, very closely, especially leading up to elections. It's, can we trust the polls in 2020 since they were so wrong in 2016? So I'll briefly touch on this first, and I want to hear what Dane has to say. I think one big issue with the polls in 2016, well, first off, they were so wrong in a number of states. Wisconsin. There wasn't a single poll, I think, in Wisconsin or Michigan that ever showed Donald Trump leading. And then in Ohio, they made it seem like it was neck and neck when Donald Trump won by 8 or 9 points here. And in Iowa, they at times made it seem like it was close, and he won there quite a bit. So I think part of it is – and maybe in some way, and maybe I'm wrong on this, I do think there is some bias with some pollsters. I think it's quite evident, because you could have five pollsters who have interview 1,000 people each and have five completely different results, because it ultimately comes down to what sample you're using. And I think in some ways they're using a sample that they thought was maybe more of a 2012 electorate or a more Democratic-leaning electorate. They completely missed the – white rural voters that maybe were not on the radar screen that came up for Donald Trump. I don't know if they're going to miss them again in 2020. I thought the polls were much better in 2018 in terms of predicting the Democrats taking control of Congress. There were some instances where they definitely were wrong. I remember Quinnipiac down in Florida had Gillum and Nelson up maybe like 3 and 5 points respectively right before the election, and they were wrong on both of those races. So there's obviously some incidents or some cases where the pollsters are wrong. As we continue this podcast moving forward, I definitely want to take a deeper dive into polls and analyzing them. At this point, it's far too early to see what's going to come of it. I wouldn't read too much in the head-to-head polls right now or any of these – head-to-head polls on a state level. To me, they don't mean too much, because we don't know who the Democratic nominee is going to be. And yeah, you might throw Joe Biden out there, but how engaged are people right now in August of 2019? Obviously, Dana and I are engaged, and you, if you're listening, are engaged. But I think the average person who really doesn't care about politics but goes and votes, they're not really going to start following this until next summer. So we'll see. I'd like to think we could trust them, but it's far too early to tell.
Well, you know, the polls in 2016 weren't that wrong. And they weren't that wrong on the national popular vote.
No, they were right on the national popular vote for sure.
Yeah, and I mean, Trump did lose by 2 points. I think it was, what, 46-48?
Yep.
And a lot of the polls were clustered around a 2 to 3 point margin in favor of Hillary, and that's what happened. So I think that – can we trust the polls on a state and local level? No, I don't buy it. Nationally, sure, because the population – or the sample size is so large. But I really think that the state and local polls have been off big time. You brought up the excellent example of what happened in Florida and Georgia and all these other areas. You know, like, for example, 2018 midterms is a good case study. The national poll showed that Democrats would win. Democrats won about 40 seats, but some of the state polls were off big. So I think that, yeah, I think that, you know, read them. They're interesting. I think that they give a good overall direction, but I don't use them as an exact tool, right? They'll tell you which way the wind's blowing potentially, but they won't tell you all the details.
Yeah. I mean, I think one thing you could really watch closely and something that would resonate is trends in polls. If even if like a Quinnipiac has a Democrat winning Florida by 4 or 5 points leading up to election day, but their previous poll had the Democrat up 10 or 11, kind of thinking of things in relative terms like that, there's obviously a shift from, you know, a bigger Democratic margin to a smaller Democratic margin. You might be able to look at things that way. And I really dive in the polls and study them closely. And again, each pollster is different. I do think, like, Quinnipiac, I thought, was always a very reputable pollster. And in many ways, I see some of their stuff now. It just doesn't make sense. Sometimes you just have to use logic in certain cases. Like in the state of Ohio, do I think Joe Biden's going to beat Donald Trump by 8 or 9 points like they showed a couple weeks ago? Absolutely not. I think Joe Biden is probably the best candidate to beat Donald Trump in Ohio, because he maybe would resonate with those Trump voters or those Obama voters that shifted over to Trump. But do I think Joe Biden is going to beat Donald Trump by a bigger margin than Obama beat McCain and Obama beat Romney in the state? Absolutely not, especially a state whose Democratic Party, like I said in the previous episode, is in shambles. They the only thing they really have right now is Sherrod Brown. Outside of that, the Republicans in the state have complete control. There's been quite a shift right in the state. And, you know, unless Joe Biden's their nominee, I don't really see Ohio being the swing state like it was in the past. It might be closer, but I definitely think Donald Trump's will end up being victorious in the state.
Yeah, I think that's a good way to put it. I think Biden may technically be up on Trump, but I don't think he's 10 points up. And also, one more point about the polls, and then I think that'll be it on this issue, would be it's very easy for people to say, yeah, I don't want to vote for Trump, right? But I think that there's a big portion of the population out there that actually does want to vote for Trump, but they want an excuse to vote for Trump, right? Like, they know socially you're going to get ostracized if you're saying you're voting for Trump. So they want to keep the market going. They want to keep the economy going. They think the Democrats are too far left. They just want an excuse to vote for him, to themselves. Maybe it's not even a public thing. So if you say, are you going to vote for – do you support Donald Trump? No, I don't support Donald Trump. I'm going to vote for somebody else other than him. Okay, that's very different than, are you going to vote for Donald Trump or Elizabeth Warren? Are you going to vote for Donald Trump or Bernie Sanders, right? Then it's a binary choice. And at that point, I think people will start to say, well, you know, I don't like Trump, but Elizabeth Warren's just too extreme for me. I'm going to vote for him anyways. Or, oh, I don't like Trump, but Elizabeth Warren's too extreme. I'm not voting for anybody, right? And I think that a lot of that is going on. So I think the polls this early don't have a lot of weight.
Yeah. I'll say this, and I'll just share this with me personally. Back in 2016, I struggled. I did not care for Donald Trump in the primaries. I did not want him being the Republican Party nominee at all. I started to warm to him after the Republican convention, and then the Access Hollywood tape came out, and that second debate right after, I'm like, oh my God, I can't believe it. There's no way I can support this guy. And it wasn't until probably the weekend before the election where I finally said to myself, listen, the Supreme Court of the United States is far more important than Donald Trump's personality, which to this day, I still don't like his personality. I still don't like a lot of his tweets. There's a difference between personality and policy. I like a lot of Donald Trump's policies, and I do think maybe sometimes you need his personality to get his policies across and to get his message across, especially with the media who absolutely can't stand him. But I want to get that message across to people. You don't necessarily have to like Donald Trump personally to vote for him or support him. I think a lot of his policies resonate across the board, across party lines. It's just a lot of it is personality. I know people in my own family who are definitely lean to the right and are typical Republican voters who to this day do not like Donald Trump at all in his personality, and it's caused them to not want to vote for him in 2020, but. It can be done. Don't let a personality get in the way. I struggle with it still quite a bit. I'll see some of his tweets. He'll go after McCain or Romney or Paul Ryan or whoever. And I ask myself, why does he do this? Just focus on your policies that are clearly working and helping the American people. And I think you'd be a lock for reelection. But it is what it is. He is who he is. It's quite obvious after 2 years he's not going to change who he is. People just got to get that through their heads. He's not going to change. And put the personality aside and just deal with the fact. Look at things objectively from a policy perspective. Look at your 401k. It's probably at all-time highs. That means a lot. And if this is an election about policy, which I think it's going to be, he's going to be tough to beat because he's brought issues to the forefront like immigration. He's delivered on tax reform that despite the left trying to make it seem like this big tax cut for the rich, I think most people across – especially most people in middle America have received some sort of tax relief. So that goes a long way. If this is strictly an election about policy – he's going to be tough to beat, but if they try to make it more about his personality again, it's going to cause some people on the fence to be a little bit weary in terms of, can I support this guy? do I want another 4 years of this turbulence in the White House? Because you know the media is going to make it out to be that way. And obviously Donald Trump, maybe that's what he wants. Maybe that's just his personality. That's what he likes. He likes that feuding with the media. He thinks it helps him. Maybe it does. Maybe it doesn't. But that's just my own personal thoughts, my own personal story related to Trump. Wasn't a big fan of him. I love his policies. I still don't like his personality, but, you know, it is what it is.
Yeah, I actually think a lot of the tweeting is good in the sense that the people he tweeted against deserve it. I'm not a big fan of McCain. McCain, there wasn't a single country on this planet that McCain did not want to invade. And then if you disagree with him, he played the war hero card, like you were a bad human being for not wanting to blow up Iran or Iraq or Afghanistan, which I think both of those wars were disasters. And I think a war with Iran would be a total disaster. I think the Republican establishment was crooked. It lost touch with the people. It was a weak edifice that was waiting to be destroyed. And I think Trump was a giant wrecking ball. And he was a bull in a china shop, but that china shop needed torn down because the Republican Party had become completely detached from the base. There was no organic relationship between what the elites were saying, what the people on the ground were saying, right? Like the elites were like, yeah, free trade's great. And meanwhile, the American middle class was being hollowed out by China entering the WTO and you know, they're basically subsidizing and destroying our industrial base. Oh, by the way, you know, it's really great. We got to liberate Iraq. Okay, so we sent all of our best and brightest youth from the Midwest over to Iraq to die for what? So the Iranians now have a proxy state. We got to talk about job creators. Job creators are great. Okay, yeah, the same job creators that would gladly outsource your job in a heartbeat so that they could save a nickel. And employ a bunch of Mexicans. Oh, immigration's great. You know, we should be a welcoming country, as Jeb Bush said. Okay, so we have 1.5 million legal immigrants and over a million illegal immigrants every year, and that doesn't affect wages. So I think the Republican establishment was completely, completely corrupt, and Trump was a breath of fresh air. So the more he tweets, the better. Yeah, his personality is odious. But a lot of the politicians that were in power were even more odious than him. And I'll add this fact. Trump hasn't gotten us into a single new war, unlike Obama and unlike Bush and unlike Clinton. So, yeah, keep on, Mr. Trump.
Yeah, no, I appreciate that because I don't want to go in another costly war. My biggest criticism of Trump is the deficit, which continue in the national debt, which just continues to grow and all that. That's a topic for another day. You bring up some points. I guess actions speak louder than words. He delivered. He won, whereas Romney couldn't. I was not a big fan of McCain either. I'll add that. He was an uninspiring candidate as far as I'm concerned. And never was a big fan of him. Romney, I thought he had he had a perfect opportunity to beat Obama in 2012, and he failed immensely.
Yes,
I'll still never understand that one. He had, especially after the first debate, which he, I think the consensus was he won in 2012. The first debate, he had all the momentum, and it's like Donald Trump acknowledged he went to sleep. He went missing for 30 days leading up to the election, and it cost him an election that the Republicans should never have lost in the first place. But I don't want to get too much into that. But you know, that's all I have. I don't know if you have anything else you want to touch on.
I think the next debate or the next podcast should be a policy debate or discussion where we talk about Donald Trump's policies, tariffs, immigration, tax cuts and stuff. We go by issue and talk about what we like, what we don't like, et cetera. I think that'd be really cool.
I'm all for it because especially we're going to have a gap here between now and the next debate, and we'll see what kind of comes up on the political front, if there's any other major stories. I'm not really anticipating too much. I'm sure there'll be some big news story, front page breaking news, and Dom Lemon's going to call it President Trump a racist. It is what it is, but you know, we'll see what happens. But I'm all for a discussion on policy. I think that would be really interesting. So I want to thank you again for tagging along and helping. Love your insight because you bring a lot to the table. And I know a lot of people that were tuning in really enjoyed what you have to say. And I know they find you very entertaining. I know they're going to find the first 5 minutes of this podcast entertaining as well, with your thoughts on some of the Democratic candidates running for president. So I want to thank you.
Well, thank you, Michael. As always, it's an honor and a privilege. And CasperMattress.com, you can buy great, comfortable mattresses. And for every one you buy, I get 5 cents.
I like it. And just a reminder for everybody, now that we are on Google Podcasts and Apple Podcasts, you can find us. Just go and search MV Red Podcast. Please subscribe. You'll get instant notifications when our next episode hits, which should be in the next day or so once I go through it and get it up and running. And also encourage you, tell your friends. If you know anybody who enjoys politics, listen, I don't think we're like – ultra far right on this podcast whatsoever. We try to look at things objectively, and I know a number of people who aren't maybe big Trump supporters or big conservatives have listened and have enjoyed thus far. So if you know of anybody out there who enjoys politics, discussions about anything like that, government, please share this podcast with them. I enjoy doing it. I'm sure, Dane, you enjoyed doing it. I've received a lot of great feedback thus far. I think a lot of people will enjoy it. And I look forward to future episodes when we talk about, like you said, policy and looking at things on a local level, maybe covering some local and statewide politics moving forward. We want to grow this, especially what we're – 16 months out, something like that, between now and the 2020 election. So we have a lot to talk about, a lot that we'll be able to get to, and we should have the opportunity to have a lot of fun with this. So I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Again, send us your questions, info@mvred.com. Subscribe, visit our website, mvred.com. So thanks again, and we'll hear from you next time. Take care, everybody.
Bye.
Bye.